It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today is Texas Senator John Cornyn. He'll join us in just a moment. First off, Scott Marlowe's with USDA's Farm Programs with FSA talks about changes to the dairy programs.
The changes that we've made so far are very much in response to the input that we've gotten from farmers. Supplemental DMC was an important step. Both DMC and supplemental DMC are equivalent, so it would be very easy to combine the two or to make that a permanent change. We're happy to provide technical assistance in any and look at any suggested reforms, but we've made extensive changes and improvements to the program over the last couple of years and believe that it is in concert with the risk management agency programs a strong safety net.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're in Washington, D.C., and we ran into the Honorable John Cornyn. He represents the great state of Texas. Great to see you.
Good to see you up here in the capital city.
And it is a busy time. It's always busy in D.C. I don't think it's ever not busy, but especially the last few weeks of a session.
Yeah, my dad always used to say, don't ever mistake activity for progress. And so we're trying to do a little of both. But yeah, this is what's called the lame duck session of Congress following the November the 8th, the midterm elections. And where some things have to get done, things like the annual appropriations bills have to be done in order to keep the government funded and up and running. Honestly, though, this is not a great way to do business. We've fallen away from the usual, what we call around here, regular order, where you do smaller bills and then you mark them up in a committee where senators on both sides of the aisle have a chance to make proposals and have votes on amendments, and then they go to the floor. The same process goes forward. Unfortunately, under the current management here, they prefer not to allow rank and file members to participate, and so you are presented with an up or down vote on a bill, on a must-pass bill. So the annual spending bill is on the agenda, and the National Defense Authorization Act. But there's still a lot of other issues that are floating around here, child nutrition, and other related issues. Obviously, everybody is always interested in making sure that we have the food to eat and our supply chains are intact, and markets for domestic producers are available for them to sell their product.
You mentioned regular order, and that requires work of committee work.
Right.
You're not actually on the Ag Committee, but you've got a good group of members who are on that Ag Committee working through a farm bill. Does that mean that you don't have any input on a farm bill? It doesn't, does it?
No. One good example is when seed cotton needed some help. We were able to get with Mike Conaway's, a fellow Texan when he was chairman of the House Ag Committee, and my friend John Bozeman from Arkansas. We worked with them and others to get that back in the farm bill. And I think much to the relief of a lot of our cotton producers. So we only have 100 senators. And whether you're on a particular committee or not does not limit your ability to have impact. And given the importance of agriculture and in Texas, it's something I try to stay involved in.
Really underlines the importance of a great staff as well. And I know that you have a great staff when it comes to looking at trade issues. Is trade on your radar?
Absolutely. I just came back from a trip. I'm on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. So that was the reason I was in Australia and New Zealand most recently, and previously went to Japan with Senator Bill Hagerty. who was the former ambassador to Japan during the Trump years. And so agriculture was obviously a part of that that conversation, trade, concerns about the role China is playing in the region, and obviously those relationships. They've used trade to retaliate against Australia in particular for not, you know, bending a knee to the Chinese Communist Party. So, but in my conversations in Japan in particular, Rahm Emanuel, former congressman, former chief of staff to President Bill Clinton, we talked a lot about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the missed opportunity that we should have taken advantage of back during the Obama years. I think that's now proven to be a mistake. And we, unfortunately, the Biden administration is not as trade-friendly. They're very close to organized labor, and for some reason, organized labor is very reluctant for us to enter into trade agreements. But thankfully, we were able to do things like the USMCA during the Trump years. But unfortunately, I don't see us getting back into that into the trade business like we should to provide more markets to our producers during the current administration. But we're going to keep pushing.
Last one here for you, and our focus is usually agriculture and rural America, but when we say rural America, we're talking about more than half of your state.
Absolutely.
So when you look at what's ahead for Texas as we move into 2023 and what's happening in Congress, how do those two kind of line up? What do you see coming?
Well, of course, we've just come out of a terrible pandemic where our kids were not able to go to school, where they were asked to learn online. But what was demonstrated there, one of the many deficiencies we've seen is the lack of broadband in rural Texas and rural America. And so we've made tremendous investments, but like all infrastructure, it's not something you can flip a switch and correct. It takes time, it takes money, it takes a good plan and strategy. Fortunately, there are things like Elon Musk's Starlink, which are providing some technical answers to some of the problems we have. But, you know, the role of broadband, it used to be something that, you know, was just a matter of convenience. You'd share some pictures or send emails with your friend and family. But now I think it's become a practical necessity. And so following through on that big investment we made in broadband to make sure that all of Texas and all of rural America can fully participate, whether it's in telemedicine, and frequently rural Texans have to travel long distances just to see a medical practitioner, and unfortunately a lot of our rural hospitals are closing. And so this telehealth is very, very important to their providing access to health care, but also to education and to people who do business online who were able to take a small business and basically make it global in scale, but still operate from their living room or their basement or their garage. It's very exciting, but it all needs access to the internet and the broadband. So that's just one example of something we're working on and have been working on to make the lives of all Texans hopefully a little better.
So good to see you. Thanks for your work here. We wish you the best.
Absolutely. Glad to be with you.
Again, it's the Honorable John Cornyn, who represents the great state of Texas. We're in Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donnie Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. House Financial Services Committee had Sean Kasten, representative from Illinois, questioning Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve.
If we were to use our tool on this side of the dais to say, what should we do to address labor markets? We'd reform our immigration system. What should we do to reduce people's exposure to high-priced, volatile fossil fuels? We'd make massive investments in cleaner, cheaper energy. What should we do in response to housing supply constraints? We'd invest in housing. I could go on and on. Everything on that list is deeply, deeply partisan because the markets are looking at the United States and saying, do people in this line of work, those 537 of us who have the privilege to hold federally elected office, do we see human pain and suffering as a problem to be solved or as a frailty to be exploited for our political ends? They look at my colleagues who 2 years ago thought it was harder to stand up to Vladimir Putin and support Ukraine and say they're going to do the same thing again. They look at the talking points that all of you get every Monday. It says, talk about Biden's energy crisis, his border crisis. Don't do a damn thing. I admire your obedience. Do you have an ounce of leadership in your bodies? And so now we're left here in this moment, and I'm not going to ask you to opine on policies. I understand you can't do that. But you were so eloquent 2 years ago in saying, if we don't balance fiscal and monetary policies, we are going to be looking at a recovery that looks much more like the Great Depression or the 2008 recession, where it was a long, slow recovery. What concerns do you have right now if the only tools we use to respond in this moment is monetary policy?
Powell replied,
honestly, as you can imagine, I'm very focused on monetary policy. And I think that the thing that I assume you're hearing from your constituents at home is about inflation. And that is our assignment. You know, it's not that we control all of it.
Well, I guess, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are. But when I talked to the CFO of a manufacturing company a month ago, and he said, my business school teacher taught me to do just-in-time inventory, and now I'm trying to manage to just-in-case inventory. That requires capital. We talk to chip manufacturers who are saying, I need money to build, but I need a labor force to grow there, and I don't know how to do that unless I have access to capital. Raising rates is great at curtailing demand. It's also great at curtailing supply. So what concerns do you have if all we do is raise rates?
Well, you're right. There would be supply effects as well. For example, to look at housing. You know, if housing starts, we'll slow down, and I get that. But ultimately, we have a job to do, which is to restore price stability so that the economy can function well. It's really the bedrock of the economy, and it's most important for the people at the lower end of the spectrum who are now seeing their wages and savings eaten up by inflation. So we need to do that. There's lots of other things that need to be done in the economy. And that aren't the business of the Fed, but we have that job, and that really is our focus, along with, of course, preserving a strong labor market. The two mandates are equal. In the current situation, the labor market is very strong. It's extremely strong. Two vacancies for every unemployed person, 3.6% unemployment, and wages moving up. So it really is a question of getting inflation under control, and that has to be our focus.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Livingston Machinery Company wants to help get your farm equipment performance ready with one of the best preventative maintenance deals of the year. The annual Winter Service Special is going on now and offers 15% off AGCO parts with qualifying inspection, 10% off service, and 180 days no interest, no payments when you use your AGCO Plus account. Let us help you get your machine in top condition for when it's time to get back in the fields. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, John Cornyn, Senator from Texas.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton, bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The December USDA crop production report reflects the quiet period of the year with just a shoring up of production numbers for commodities. Primarily, most of the focus this month is on cotton.
The production changes this month are pretty modest overall in terms of cotton production. They did make an adjustment on cotton yields, adding 13 pounds an acre to get to 868 pounds an acre. That's a pretty modest change. It's about 1.5% increase over the prior month's estimate.
USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer. Orange production forecast provided a first look at Florida's crop post-hurricanes Ian and Nicole.
We did see some pretty big changes when it came to oranges, Valencia and non-Valencia changes from hurricane impacts.
A 29% decline in Florida orange production from the prior forecast, with total U.S. orange production down 11% from October. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.